see your tender. You know, I went to a movie yesterday, and there was a trailer about a movie with dogs, and my heart was in my mouth. My wife was crying. We're all tender. This is not a hellfire and brimstone. This is not a thundery sermon. It's just some wind. There's some wind in it. Was anyone here wearing their favorite pair of shoes? Favorite pants? Pants, yeah. Coat? Jacket? Anything else that's your favorite?
A vest.
A favorite vest. Oh, very good. And you didn't even know what the story was going to be. I found that it's very dangerous for me to decide on a favorite shirt. Some disaster is bound to happen. It's going to get torn or dragged through the grittiest crud imaginable. The end may come in a variety of ways, but surely the days of that shirt are numbered that I dare to call my favorite. My favorite pants are not much safer, but no one is wearing any pants in the story that I'll tell now. One day, in 1977, just 4 years ago, I was walking along on a beach near Madras on the southeast coast of India. I was wearing sandals and a lungi, which is a wraparound garment worn something like a towel by men in that part of India, and my favorite shirt, pale blue with a paisley pattern and light in its hair, 10 years old maybe, but still not frayed or seedy or ready to be turned into something else. It was just getting thinner and lighter all the time, and evenly. The pattern was barely visible anymore. It was incredibly comfortable, even in the Indian hot season, which was nearing its peak and was the main reason I headed to the beach. Now I was approaching some clusters of huts built right on the sand. The surf was pounding. A stiff wind blew constantly into shore. I took off my sandals, tied the shirt around my waist, and walked by the water's edge. Soon I came upon a group of naked boys who were busy catching something near the water's edge. Coming closer, I saw there was some kind of shrimp or crab that was exposed after every wave for just a second or two, and then burrowed very rapidly under the sand. One of them showed me his catch between his fingers when I asked him to, and he laughed. He laughed and said he was surprised that I could speak his language, and he laughed at how I did. I kept walking, but as soon as I was out of sight of the boys, I tried to catch one of the creatures myself, but I couldn't. I still love catching stuff. I just love catching stuff. I was glad that no one saw me trying. I was getting a little tired of being the stranger, of being noticed whenever I did or said any little thing. Well, soon I came to another group, some older boys. These guys were farther out in the water, jumping through big waves, and they didn't see me approaching. I was still waiting in the shallows, keeping my eyes peeled for those little crustaceans when I saw a flash of silver by my toes. The remains of a 2 paisa coin. 2 paisa coins are made of a soft alloy, something like aluminum. The markings and the face and the numbers on this one were barely visible, like the paisleys on my shirt. But just as I picked it up to identify it, the boys noticed me, a white man holding up a coin. One started to gesture, show me that they were ready to dive for coins. Was this a game that tourists sometimes played with them? I had to show them that I was no tourist. We didn't need these gestures. I spoke to them and explained that the coin was old and worn out, and I hadn't come here to throw coins. I hadn't come to play that game, but they said, well, why don't you just throw that one? They asked. I said, okay. They laughed and they jumped as I tossed it. It didn't go far, but the boys dived repeatedly to find it. How could something so thin and worn be worth all of that effort? There was not enough left of it to spend. Not really. There was just enough to make a game, and we played it for one round. Then the boys evidently believed that I didn't have any more coins or I wasn't going to throw them. They went back to the waves, and I continued on. I was just approaching a small seaside village when up came a very beautiful young woman in a purple sari. She greeted me in English. "Hello, what is your name?" Stifling a laugh. I replied that my name was Craig. "What's yours?" But now the laugh escaped, and it was plain that she'd memorized her greeting and really spoke no more English. I repeated what I'd said, this time in Tamil, and she told me that her husband had sent her to bring me home. Her husband. She turned and pointed toward a group of thin black men who were gathered near several small boats that were lying overturned on the sand. One man motioned for me to come, while the woman removed herself in another direction. The men studied me with the unswerving stare that I'd seen so often before in India, the stare reserved for foreigners who passed through their world like a movie on a screen, barely real. Uncomfortable with that stare, I greeted the man who had motioned to me and asked if the woman was his wife. He put his face almost right in mine and said, "Do you know Tamil?" I said, "Yes, I do, a little." The men all gathered round me. All were wearing lungis like I was, but they had no sandals or shirts. And now I could see that they were not thin, but gaunt. Their eyes stood out and shined a little wildly. 9 or 10 gaunt men, full of questions, asking them all at once. The woman's husband took charge. He's sort of acting a part of the MC. "Hold on, one at a time, you'll get your turn. Are you from America?" "Yes." "Lost?" "No, I knew my way." "No white people ever come so far down the beach. Why are you here?" "I came to India to study music." "No, not why India. Why are you here on our part of the beach?" "I just came. Suma Vandam." I had questions for them too. Were they fishermen? "Yes." "Did they live right on the beach?" "Yes." "No mosquitoes with this strong wind, right?" "Right. I had problems with mosquitoes where I stayed. It must be good to live here." There were some quiet smiles. "No mosquito problems. Not when the wind's like this. Is the fishing pretty good here too? Let's go sit down by the boats," someone suggested. They explained the strong winds that I'd been enjoying had been blowing straight into shore very hard for days. They couldn't go out in their boats at all. Food was running out, but the winds would not let up. So there was no problem with mosquitoes here, like at the windless place where I stayed. There I lost a little blood and itched. Here they lost flesh and ached. Well, now I understood the intensity of their gaze. I was surrounded by 9 hungry men. Not just hungry, but beginning to starve. I didn't know what to say, and must have looked like it. So to change the subject, or maybe it was to save me from my obvious discomfort, one of them said that he liked my shirt. I had laid it across my lap. He picked up the sleeve. "Is it an American shirt?" "Yeah." He held it up. I could see him right through it, grinning with pleasure. And then another man took it and fingered the collar, fingering those little white plastic stays that are sewn inside to keep the shape. You know the things I'm talking about? You know, when I was a boy, my dad kept a box of those on his dresser, the plastic and metal that would go with his dress shirts. I guess you took them out when you washed them. I would play with them before I knew what they were for and call them knives. Knives for the collar. Watching that hungry man as he fingered them, I suddenly thought of knives again. The shirt moved away from me around the circle, and my heart crept up to my throat to join the suggestion of knives. I was alone in a strange place. No friends knew where I'd gone that day. My passport was tucked in a pouch folded into my lungi, my only identification, easy to sell or dispose of. Sitting there nearly naked, I remembered hearing all my life about desperate people who'd kill you to get the shirt off your back if they ever got a chance. And I was providing just such a chance. And I was surrounded. Surrounded is a terrible way to be alone. And surrounded by desperate people. Okay. So I said all at once that the shirt was 10 years old. Bullshit. The effect was dead opposite to what I'd intended. 10 years. He says his shirt's 10 years old. Look here, can you believe it? What shirts they might have ever owned would have been short fiber cotton, short-lived shirts when washed by beating on stone. Mine must be very valuable, or else how many did I have? Only two or three shirts, really. Not wanting to sound rich or something. Americans are very good at playing poor when they're overseas. Well, are they all 10 years old? Are they all this good? The less that I made of that shirt, the more that it seemed to become. It grew until it was surely too much for me to have all to myself. If these guys were going to take it, would they share it? Or maybe it would go to the one with the knife that I knew was about to appear. There was hardly anything left of that shirt, just enough to make trouble, and now I was in it. It continued moving away from me around the circle. Was I going to lose that shirt or lose my life on account of something so thin and worn? Well, these men were just as thin and much more worn by that awful wind. Surely by now there was just enough left of them to make some bad news out of me. I imagined a little news item in the paper about some foreigner found dead on the beach. It was getting closer and closer until it reached my host sitting next to me. He put it on my lap again. My shirt, not a knife. 10 years, he said. That's quite a shirt. I calmed down. The men in the circle continued to look hungry and intense, but I knew that I was not in danger. We talked about other things for a while. Was I married yet? No. How long would I stay in India? Would I marry a Tamil woman? I made my replies, and I was soon joking with them a little. It had been less than half an hour. But sitting still in one place in that powerful sun, my shoulders had started to visibly redden. Here, look at this, your skin's burning, my host said, and picked up my shirt again. The man on the other side also reached over and helped him to carefully cover my neck and shoulders with him. It was a tender moment. Well, soon, I wished them luck, and I returned the way I had come. I have no doubt that things could have gone differently with different fishermen on a different beach or on another day on the same beach. And there are, I know, some people who really will kill you to get the shirt off your back as soon as look at you. Maybe if I'd come after a few more days of wind, those same men would have taken my shirt, my sandals, whatever money I had, my life, and even my lungi, in more or less that order. Maybe. But I don't think so. I don't think so. For one thing, they were kind. But even if they weren't, I still think they would have sooner looked at me than killed me. Let me tell you why. Some weeks later, I was walking through a part of a city near the beach where there were several large movie theaters. A familiar voice called out, "Hello, what is your name?" And I saw the woman who called to me that day. She was walking with a group of women friends on the other side of the street, pointing me out and laughing. He's a funny guy. I crossed over to greet her and asked, had the winds let up enough for the men to go fishing? They had. And everything was much better now. Where was she and her friends going? Well, to see a film, of course. The men would go later that evening. You would think that the people of that fishing village, in the wake of such an ill wind, would be concerned about nothing but practical matters. But what's the first thing they do when they get just a little bit ahead in money? A movie. Were they out for an easy escape from the reality of their conditions? But to understand these women, starving a week ago but now going barefoot to a movie, we must understand that whether you are rich or poor, the life of the imagination is very important. I'm imagining a cricket. Hello, cricket. The life of the imagination is terribly important. To feed the imagination is almost as great a priority as feeding the body. When I had appeared on the beach that hungry day, maybe I'd been something like a movie scene passing through their world. Why destroy it? Why go to a movie and tear up the screens? We go to the beach to find relief from the workaday world. But for these men, maybe my visit provided some relief from their workaday world of the beach. A nice change for a change. One that wasn't a disaster. Speaking of disasters, we tend to get disoriented and shaken when the winds of the world seem to blow all wrong. Opposite from the way we expected, like they did here last week. Winds blowing like that, dead opposite from what we hoped. That's life, I'm guessing, for a majority of the world's people. The fisherman said it was. If my shirt had suddenly blown off my shoulders and been lost, that might have been a shame, but nothing too unusual. Wind, sand, and water were shifting all the time, taking things away, leaving things behind. A little shrimp, a little hope sometimes, sometimes a little more than others. There was just enough left of that shirt to make a lesson. And I'm still trying to learn it. To learn to be thankful for the shirt on my back and all the many ways my life is covered from want and danger. Maybe you'd also like to share something that you're thankful for this morning. For what are you thankful and grateful for? I see a couple people holding on what they're thankful for, which is each other. You young kids, I don't know.
Community.
Family.
Co-workers.
Children, co-workers. Why East, this place?
Life.
Yeah.
The senior center.
Food. Rain.
Yeah, after all those drought years, huh?
Art.
Thank you. Thank you for your responses. I also hope that you will remember to make use, someone said art, make use of the relief and inspiration that you can draw from favorite films, music, books, from scriptures, sermons, religious community. There's no sense denying yourself these things while you have the chance to use them. There's real power there, not just distraction. The troubled winds and seas will still be there when you're ready to face them. And I know that you will be. When I was getting ready to leave India, I had some things that I didn't want to carry. I had become friendly with two watchmen at the compound where I was staying, Babu and Mahalingam. I gave Babu my bedding, my kerosene stove, and cooking vessels. Later, I would send him a radio, but I've already told you that story. Mahalingam, or Mali, told me that he would like a real American shirt. That blue one still looked good, so I asked him if he'd like it. He would. He and I were about the same size. He left, looking delighted. But the next time I saw him, his face just clouded right over. You know that shirt you gave me? It was beautiful, so cool, but you know, it was so thin that it fell apart the first time my wife washed it. And the Indian method of beating garments on a stone had been too much, and it had just disintegrated. Molly didn't expect anything more from me, but wanted to let me know his disappointment. I had thought there was enough left of that shirt to make a gift that would last a while. Instead, there was just enough to make problems again. Enough to make me feel guilty, a giver of vanishing gifts. Did he think I played a cruel joke to show that he's too stupid to treat an American shirt correctly? Now, my new favorite shirt designate was lying freshly folded near my bags, ready to wear on the plane the next day. I asked Mahalingam if he would like it. He was American too, and practically new. He accepted it gladly, though I suspect he might have asked his wife to omit the stone cycle while washing it. It happened that Mahalingam was the last Tamil friend I saw that day, on the day that I left India. That morning, the first monsoon rains of the year started, and it looked like I was going to get soaked along with my backpack. Mahalingam saw me dodging from tree to tree with no umbrella and asked me what I was doing. I told him I had to catch my plane and would miss it if I couldn't find a taxi soon. He said, "Don't worry, just get your things together." And he went tearing off on his bicycle toward the main road, holding his umbrella over his head as he pedaled. He was back in a flash, followed by a taxi. He helped me load up, keeping me and my things covered with the umbrella. As we said goodbye to each other, "Go and come. I will go and come," as it's put in Tamil. I noticed that he was wearing that second shirt. I'd been too anxious to notice at first. He looked just splendid. I was glad that he had it, even though there was nothing left of the first shirt except a rag. 40 years now since I left India, there must be nothing left at all.